Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.
This is Quality of Life, Valley Public Radio's look at the people and the issues affecting the way we live in the San Joaquin Valley. Here is your host, Joe Moore.
Well, hello and welcome to our program today. The state of California has a long love-hate relationship with nuclear power. It's been 26 years since Diablo Canyon, the state's newest nuclear power plant, came online on the Central Coast. Since then, reactors at Rancho Seco near Sacramento and San Onofre near San Diego have been decommissioned, and the state's moratorium on the construction of new plants still remains in effect. But now, with rising concerns over global warming and a state law that requires dramatic cuts in CO2 emissions, nuclear power is gaining renewed interest in the Golden State. One Fresno-based group wants to build a so-called clean energy park, including two reactors here in the valley. All of this comes in the wake of the ongoing crisis at the Fukushima nuclear power plant in Japan, following the earthquake and tsunami that devastated the northern Japanese coast, and the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl accident. Does nuclear power have a place in the future of the valley? Is it a clean energy solution to solving our environmental and economic problems? Or is it a dangerous idea that could endanger Valley residents and agriculture? As always, we'd like to know what you think. You can call us at 559-275-8989 or toll free 800-224-8989. You can also email us at talk@kvpr.org. Also, you'll want to stay tuned because later in our program today, we'll be joined by Fresno Unified Superintendent Michael Hansen. It's a conversation about education that you won't want to miss. Right now, though, we're joined in studio by John Hudson. He is the president and CEO of the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it very much.
About a month ago, your organization signed an agreement with the French nuclear and renewable energy company Areva to explore the feasibility of building a clean energy park in the San Joaquin Valley, including a wastewater treatment facility, a concentrated solar power plant, and in the project's second phase, two 1,600-megawatt reactors. How did this project come about, and what are the origins of your group's plans? This is not something that just dates to a month ago. You've been working on this for some time.
Well, it's really culminated when several of us got together and realized the economic conditions of the valley, number one. Chairman of the board, Bob Smitkamp, was giving lots of money to Fresno State, creating scholarships and wings, and the Caglia family hadn't found a Catholic charity they didn't like. I was on the board for the, and still am, Marjorie Mason Center for Domestic Violence, and saw how the domestic violence statistics in Fresno County were rising at a very quick and fast rate compared to the rest of the state, simply because we didn't have jobs. We were being called Appalachia West by the Brookings Institute out of Washington. Less doctors per thousand in Madera, more food stamps in Tulare than any place in West Virginia. And we just decided that in order to change our valley for the best, we're going to have to do something very dramatic. Number one, we're at the mercy of the federal government on water for the valley. Our farmland is the best in the world. We export even to China, which the rest of the United States can't say. So looking at all these things, we said, well, permanently, how can we create jobs, provide water independence and energy independence, and for us, stop giving bushel baskets full of money to countries that hate us for their oil? It's independence we're looking for. And we began looking at the energy source. But lots of things didn't pencil out, and we worked on it for about 6 months, and we became convinced that a clean energy park, including nuclear power, would absolutely provide that independence and move the valley forward on a long range. And I don't want to take too long on why, but that's exactly how it started.
Now, as I understand it, you were involved with the city of Fresno a few years ago with the Utility Advisory Commission. And this is a group that the then Fresno Mayor Alan Autry put together to look at the utility rates in the city of Fresno and the entire system of public utilities in this area. And you began to think about the possibilities of the wastewater treatment plant in Fresno. Is that how this?
You've done a lot of homework, Joe. Actually, I went on that commission and became chairman of it because I was determined that to find some assets in the utility division and a way to change things so rates wouldn't have to be raised. And the only asset, sadly to say, was 85 million gallons of gray water coming out of the wastewater treatment plant. Your only asset is tertiary two, not even one, gray water. Now, what could we do with the gray water? I mean, we're putting it on top of the ground now, percolating it in the ground. The water table under the wastewater plant is getting so high that we have to pump all the time to keep it low enough so that the water will clean itself on the way down. But then I got to looking, and the largest nuclear power plant in the nation in Arizona pumps their gray water 90 miles to cool their plant. I don't know, we can do that. And then I began to look at some things that France was doing with the 80% of their power coming from nuclear and how they were doing it. And it occurred to me there's no reason that Fresno County, the same size basically as Israel is, couldn't do it. Israel's doing it. Israel invented drip watering. So the further we pursued this, the more sense it made.
That was back in the middle part of the last decade that that group came about and this idea formed. Is that still part of the plan?
Yes.
As far as using – the Valley is a naturally arid region. We think of many of the major nuclear power plants, whether here in the U.S. or in other places, along large bodies of water to cool the reactors. So is that still part of your plan to use water from the Fresno wastewater plant, or is there another source that you're looking at?
There are several sources. We would like to have City of Fresno involved because there's a revenue stream there that they don't have now, and they could use the money, obviously. But it's not a deal breaker if we don't. There's several, not only wastewater, but other ways to cool this plant. As I've mentioned many times, people that look at this plant start discussing their electricity bills. Well, that is not our first goal. Our first goal is water, food, farming, and then electricity. Water, well, if you took 150 megawatts of electricity or 150 megawatts of energy and you desalted 200,000 acre feet, roughly those numbers are correct, well, 200,000 acre feet of water would irrigate 40,000 acres. And as most farmers know in the Valley, if those 40,000 acres were currently in Thompson seedless grapes, you'd be grossing $200 million a year. Now, you're not going to do that off of selling electricity from 150 megawatts. So the amount of water underground that's contaminated from salt or some other chemical can easily be cleaned, and that water can go to irrigate currently some hundreds of thousands of acres of fallow ground that doesn't currently have water.
Let's go to the phones now and take a call. We have Lonnie in Bakersfield on the line. Lonnie, welcome to Quality of Life. You're speaking with John Hudson of the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group.
Thank you for taking my call, but I think you might have answered my question. My question was concerning about the water. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lonnie, for that call. And John, in terms of the water, one of the other issues with a nuclear power plant, you're not only using water, you're also consuming water at some point in controlling the reaction and cooling the plant. How much water does a plant consume? I don't need, gallons answer, but
20 million gallons. Probably a day. It's mostly recirc. The EPR is what we call a pressure water reactor.
And the EPR is the technology that the French company Areva is developing. There's one reactor currently in use in Finland using this technology. And as I understand it, the the Nuclear Energy Commission is currently working on the approval for this type of reactor design for the U.S. has not granted that yet. But go ahead again in regards to the water.
Well, a pressure water reactor is different from a boiling water reactor. A boiling water reactor, very simply, you heat the water, it boils, and use the steam to turn a turbine, and that makes the electricity. But a pressure water reactor is a closed-loop system, which means you can heat the water up to 600 degrees and it will not boil if you keep it under pressure. Then you put that water through a radiator that heats the other water. Now, the other water will turn to steam and turn the reactor. It's a very much a more safe situation than just boiling water. So if you have to release boiling water, there's no contamination issues involved. I want to say one other thing to Lonnie in Bakersfield when he was asking about the water. There's another revenue stream for Fresno Nuclear. You realize, of course, if you take all the salt and the chemicals out of the water, clean up Kesselson Wildlife Preserve, and use those salts and minerals, what are you going to do with them? We have, and the company will be in front of the chamber, I think, in 2 weeks, a company that makes kitchen tiles, floor tiles, roof tiles out of almost pure salt and bicarbonates that are taken out of that water. And the plume of this, when powered by CO2-free energy, becomes, Joe, carbon negative. Now, so many times we think we're cleaning up the environment or we're doing best when you say carbon neutral. But no, this is carbon negative. It actually will remove some of the CO2. So when I say clean energy park, I don't mean that we won't emit any CO2s. I mean we're after carbon negative.
I'd like to go to our email now. We just got an email from Luana in Fresno. She says, this idea is outrageous. I don't care what type of phony arguments are used to justify putting a nuclear reactor in the valley. It's always about someone making loads of money, no matter what the outcome. Why should the rich and powerful care what happens to people in this valley as they have their mansion in a safe place? More than one, I am sure. This is the breadbasket of the world, and one little mishap with this reactor and the farmland is destroyed for thousands of years. There's a number of things there, and we'll get to some of those in our questions throughout the program and with other callers in a little bit. But I wanted to go to the money issue and talk about your group. Many times when we look at the major nuclear power plants, they're either owned by a major utility, Southern California Edison, PG&E, or a metropolitan utility like SMUD up in Sacramento. You're a private group. How does this come about? I've seen some folks in the media, others say that, is this group really serious about building this type of a plant? This is a multi-billion dollar effort, and while your board certainly has some of the Valley's prominent business names, Mr. Smitkamp, Mr. Cagley, and others, Al Smith from the Chamber of Commerce, is this really within your means to pull off? And who benefits from this financially in terms of the investment and reaping the profits from such a venture?
Well, we've been called all kinds of things for starting this. First phase, ridicule, and then ridiculed by those threatened, and then I think the third phase will be that it becomes self-evident. We've been called amateurs and leave this to the utility company and let the pros do it and all those things. And someone gave me a quote that said, pros built the Titanic and an amateur built the Ark. There is a lot of money involved in this. And so far, it's all been ours. We're not asking for federal loan guarantees. We're not selling stock, although we've had a long list of people ready to buy into this. At this point, we think we need to do it on our own. We're not putting ratepayers at risk like a utility would if they were doing this. And we're not asking for anything. So as long as we can keep it going and move forward, we think that it's best for the Valley. Are we going to be able to finance the first $5.5 billion for the EPR? Probably not. We realize that Little Fresno is like a flea on a lion's tail, and then once this thing gets going, there's going to be an awful lot of people wanting even more to be involved. We've been contacted by the Chinese and the South Koreans, both wanting to be involved. I've said no because I don't want them involved in control of our water for farming. It's independence that started this, and I don't think that Chinese money or any other country's money should dictate what we're going to do. But we spend an awful lot of money.
But you do have a partnership with Areva, which in large part is owned by the French government, or controlled by the French government, is it
and
not?
85% of it's owned by the French government. Yes, we do have a partnership with them, and they have been sterling, but they're not looking to own our plant. They're not a developer. They're just a manufacturer, the world's largest, but they're selling their technology and their system, and they've assisted us in moving forward. They do as much desal work in Africa and as much renewable work and wave technology and those types of things, geothermal, that we don't do in California. So they are a big help, but other countries want a piece of the action, so to speak, and that's not what we're after.
We're talking about the prospects of building a nuclear power plant in the Valley, and we'd like to know what you think. You can call us with your thoughts. Is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Or somewhere in between. The phone number is 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. You can also email us at talk@kvpr.org, and we'll go to the phones now and talk to Franz on line one. Franz, welcome to Quality of Life. And Franz, I should just state for the record, you are a volunteer here at the station on our Valley Writers Read program. So, Franz, go ahead.
Correct, yes. Well, my question is, it seems to be very risky to build a nuclear plant here in the Valley. It's I remember the Coalinga earthquake of 1983, and that had a destructive power of 6.5. Now, why would you want to build a plant, a nuclear plant, in an area like that? Next is this matter of water. If there were a earthquake, there would have to be a lot of pipes underground, and that might also disrupt some of the ability to pump the water from underground. They're usually built next to the ocean or next to lakes. Even though I know that the industry claims everything is a lot safer than it used to be, when we hear and we see what's happened in Japan, we know that there is a lot of danger there, and the danger would be there not only just temporarily, but for many, many, many years to come. And that's probably why there is no free market insurance company that actually, insures nuclear power plants. Even if there were a small leak, a small accident in this thing with a prevailing wind coming from the ocean toward the valley, this might result in ruining all of the valley's agriculture. And it's a very, very risky thing. And finally, I just think there's a lot of marginal land out in that area where they're planning to build this thing. Why not build solar power that does not have any radioactivity with it and would result in some really awful accidents and ruin the valley's agriculture.
Well, Franz, thank you for that call. John, your response to those concerns. Earthquakes are a danger here in California. How do you respond to that, and what type of earthquake do you build the plant to withstand?
Well, first off, our preliminary investigation shows that the best place to build a nuclear power plant in California is the corridor running down the Central Valley based exactly on those earthquakes. I might remind France that the reactors at Fukushima were late 1950s technology, commissioned in 1971, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do with an earthquake as big as we know of in human history, or one of the biggest, and the reactor scrammed exactly like it's supposed to. Scramming in nuclear terms is when it detects something that's not supposed to be there. It's a passive system, and the rods were lowered to stop the reaction, and everything worked fine. It was designed for about a 7, and that was well over a 9. So that worked fine. What what tore up Fukushima was the tsunami, which we're not worried about. I understand the concerns that France has, and we're Valley citizens ourselves, and we're farmers ourselves, and the pipes underground and those kinds of things that he's talking about. You must remember that, or you might need to know that the EPR has four redundant cooling systems located above the reactor core, each one capable of handling the full load. We don't have pipes underground. Now, in a case where you had no water coming in, once the reactor shut down, each one of those cooling systems begins passively, through gravity, passively meaning no human involvement, starts dropping water and cooling the reactor. And then by convection, as the water's heated, it goes back up to the closed system and back up to the cooling system again. So it continually recycles the same water without very little evaporation. I sense and feel the fears of people all the time when they're concerned about this. I also want to remind them that I don't know that how many people, including this radio station, could operate their business with late 50s technology. Fresno Nuclear believes that the coastline is no place for nuclear reactors. We think that the 60-year lifespan that the federal government allows reactors to operate, the last 20 years they make so much money, that it should be that technology is the driving force. And so after 40 years, close them down and use new technology. I mean, you bought an iPad at Christmas, it's already obsolete because a new one's out. So why shouldn't you do the same thing in something like nuclear?
Isn't there some concern, though, with this new technology that Areva is rolling out? The EPR reactor is so new, it hasn't really been proven yet, other than in this site in Finland. It's still working to gain regulatory approval across Europe, and there have been a number of technical concerns about its redesign to try to ensure that these safety systems work. And there's also some concern about the cost of the system. The cost of all of these redundant safety features pushes it, as some experts have said, out of the ballpark of economic feasibility. Aren't there risks also associated with that approach?
Well, I just don't think that there should be a limit on how much safety you do in a reactor. You know, Joe, I went to Finland to look at that reactor and was standing there watching them build that right on the Baltic Ocean with the vice premier of Finland. And I said, you know, you folks here in Finland, I mean, you're so green. I mean, you take such care of your country and it's all clean here, and you're building a nuclear power plant. I mean, isn't that a little risky for you guys? I mean, one of the largest in the world. And the vice premier of Finland told me, he said, a lot of people don't know that we were fighting both the Nazis and the Russians at the same time during World War II. We're fiercely independent. We do not want to be reliant on Russian natural gas. Our goal is energy independence, and that's more important to us than anything else. I think that same independence is in us in the Valley. I mean, the fiber that brought those in the covered wagon and all of those things. So, I mean, I think everything should be done to answer Frank's concerns about the safety. And I think it should be an open process all the time. But for us to linger under the economics and the hardships we have now trying to continue with the world changing, whether we build them or not, China's going to build 30 more by 2050. They've said that. Other countries across the world are going to be building them just as fast as they can. South Korea is building them all over the place. Even Hugo Cesar Chavez has signed with the Russians to build one in Venezuela. 12% of this country's oil comes from him, and he don't particularly care for us. So I'm what's more important to you? I mean, I know that safety is, but the double containment, 2 5-foot-thick containment walls on the Areva reactors, it means nothing gets in, nothing gets out. Corium bottom, meltdown, it stays there lost their investment, nothing in, nothing out.
We're talking about the plans of a Fresno group to build a nuclear power plant, actually two reactors in the valley. John Hudson is our guest from the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group. We'll be back with more of your calls on this topic in just a moment here on Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call. You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. We're talking about the plans of the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group to build two reactors in the valley as part of a clean energy park on the valley's west side. We'd like to know what you think. Phone number is 559-275-8989 or toll-free 800-224-8989. We have a couple of lines open, so we'd like to hear from you. You can also email us at kvpr.org. Let's go to line two now and talk to Paula in Fresno. Paula, you're on Quality of Life talking with John Hudson of the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group.
Thank you. I am consciously supportive of nuclear energy, but that's a personal note. I'm calling as a water professional for 25 years in the state of California to mention a couple of facts that I think are probably not accurate. And I believe if you're advocating for a project, it's important that you make all of your facts accurate. Otherwise, everything you say in my mind is questionable. And the two facts I'm commenting on are that you said 200,000 acre-feet of water would supply 400,000 acres of land.
40,000.
Half an acre-foot of water per acre. And, in fact, the rule of thumb is 3 acre-feet of water per acre. So it's considerably less. It's not 400,000. It's closer to 60,000, not to say that 60,000 is anything to sneer at, but it's quite different than 400,000. And the second comment was that the salts can be turned into tile. Yes, that there's a many, many wonderful uses for salt. But we worked on agricultural drainage for 35 years, and the salts that come off of the lands here are very complex salts, and not all of them can be used to make something. So they have to be separated, and that's extremely difficult and costly. And if it were as easy as you're implying, we would have done it by now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that call on our program. John, how do you respond to her concern?
Well, if I said 400,000 acres, I'm an error, but my notes in front of me and having given this speech many times, I said 40,000 acres. And she said it's enough for 60,000. I understand that, but 40,000 cuts that down and makes it even more accurate. Number two, we realize with all the information that we have from Westlands how difficult the desalinization is. But again, current reverse osmosis technology will desalt 30 to 40,000 parts per million of ocean water. And some of the water that we have underground is as high as 4,000, 5,000, but some is also 2,000. And the more complex it is, the better. Now, there are technologies currently available to us that can do that. I'm pleased that Paula knows so much about water, and I think our water here is probably the most studied in the world. I'm getting my information from a gentleman named Ken Smith, who's been in the valley for a long time, a hydrologist and a geologist. Water's not my expertise, but I'm also getting it from Westlands, and that the underground flow of agricultural runoff that's heading towards Kesterson can be intercepted and desalted and then put back into agricultural use. Now, the particulars of all this, I'm sure that Paula, after all of her work, I'd love to talk to her personally because there's still lots we'd like to know. But our preliminary results, and that's exactly why we signed with the REVA, is for a water study. Now, what we intend to do is have Areva look at the studies and the information that Westlands has put together to study it in a magnifying glass that looks at it for recycling, not the general studies that they've done for other nuclear plants, and looking at the water to see if it can be desalted, like we say. So I hope that's answered a question.
We have a couple of emails now from listeners, one from Bonnie and one from Parlin, who just emailed in with questions about the technology in regards to the spent fuel from a nuclear power plant. This is a concern because California still has a moratorium on construction of new nuclear power plants until the federal government comes up with some solution for storing spent fuel. Last year, President Obama defunded the Yucca Mountain plant, store the nation's spent fuel in Nevada, and established a Blue Ribbon Commission to examine the possibilities there. How do you get around that? There was an effort in 2007 to change the law, but as of right now, that is still an issue for anyone looking to build such a plant in California, is it not?
No, it's not.
How so?
Well, let me comment on the Yucca Mountain thing.
We only have a few minutes left, so okay. Let's not go
all
too
right,
far
let's go
afield.
To the moratorium real quickly. The moratorium was challenged in the Supreme Court. And the federal government says that's a federal rights issue, not a state's rights issue. That they upheld the moratorium, the decaying law that it is, saying that the states have a right to protect the ratepayers from these large utilities from overcharging them for nuclear electrical power plants. Now, if you wanted to build one right now under 50 thermal units, nothing stops it because the moratorium is 50 thermal units and above. If you want to build a nuclear power plant right now and not make any electricity and just use the heat for industrial purposes, the moratorium doesn't affect you. One of our partners is Professor B.B. Blevins, the two-time California Energy Commissioner, who says that the moratorium, to uphold the moratorium, and says it doesn't affect you if you're not going to make electricity.
Okay, we have another caller on the line now. Let's go to Mario in Fresno. Mario, you're on Quality of Life.
Good morning. I've been listening here for a couple of minutes, and frankly, the representative of the nuclear energy company sounds like a snake oil salesman. He was asked by you, what are the dangers? And so he brings up Finland and how they fought the Russians and the Nazis at the same time, and then he goes into talking about the how the Chinese are going to have so many, how the Russians are going to have so many, and even Hugo Chavez. So he's kind of baiting us. These are our perceived enemies that are going to have this, and we're not. And that's why we should, go for this. Frankly, he doesn't answer a lot of questions. And again, his whole approach is really a turnoff to me. He sounds like a typical energy company character that wants to sell us something that probably is not a good idea. Thanks a lot.
Well, Mario, thank you for that call. And John, that is a concern. There is a lot of concern in the public on building a plant such as this. In fact, a recent Gallup poll from about a month ago says 58% of Americans think nuclear power plants are safe, but 48% of Americans think the dangers are too great to justify building more plants. That comes from a recent USA Today Gallup poll. And you told the San Francisco Chronicle in 2007, quote, "The only thing that will stop us will be if voters say we don't want nuclear power in California." Is that still an accurate statement?
If our community and the voters of California decide that they don't want this here, that will be the only thing that stops us, even if we could do it anyway. That would stop us. And as far as Mario's question about safety, it is the prime object we look at. The EPR, with its 2 5-foot containments, can withstand a 747 fully loaded with fuel and turn it into powder. It can withstand missile strikes. It's basically oblivious to any of those kinds of activities. I am who I am, and I'm doing the best I can, and I'm sorry that Mario referenced snake oil salesmen, but I think if you don't have a reply or a way to fix some of the things we're going to fix, who's the snake oil salesman? I mean, you can criticize, but what's your solution? Back to coal? I mean, coal puts out more radiation than nuclear power plants do when they're operating properly. Women who are pregnant are advised not to eat fish from streams by coal plants. The CO2s that are put in the air is very harmful. I hesitate to mention a quote by Dr. James Lovelock, known as the father of environmentalism. Began it. He said, if man experienced something like Chernobyl every year, and it became an endemic, man could live. But man will not live through global climate change. Now, I don't know if that's true either. But if saying things like that make me a snake oil salesman, then so's the father of environmentalism.
We have an email here from Lysandra in Fresno, in Oakhurst, and she says, why not go completely green and focus on a revenue stream from energy of solar and wind? We pray the Valley will never have a nuclear reactor. This is total madness. The Valley has a number of large-scale solar plants under consideration. Your project includes solar. Why have, if solar is so lucrative, why have these reactors to begin with in the first place?
Solar's not lucrative. I mean, as in everything else, it's going to take a mixture of solar and nuclear. And we say that nuclear can't do it without its little brother and sister, Sunny and Windy. But you see, the 260 square miles of Lake Mead that power let out of Hoover Dam could be replaced by a 1,600 megawatt EPR or something very close to it. Solar, putting it on the west side, takes up so much of the land to provide the energy demands by 2040 and 2050 in this state, we do without our farmland. It makes no sense. Solar doesn't work at night, and wind doesn't work when the wind's not blowing. So there has to be a base load activity from something. It's not going to be hydro. What can it be? Natural gas? Well, that's unregulated, and that's not working so well for us this year in California. So we think nuclear is a much better idea.
Let's go back to the phones and go to Artie in Fresno. He is an ex-nuclear power plant operator. Artie, you're on Quality of Life. Are you there?
Yes, I am. There's a lot of issues in here that ignorance doesn't seem to support. Bill Gates is embarking on a movement to take expended fuel and turn it into batteries.
This is Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. We have John Hudson from the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group with us today, and we're talking about the plans for the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group to build a clean energy park on the west side of the valley. As we move on, we have another call here from... Let's see here. We have Walt in Bakersfield, or rather, we actually lost Walt. We have Maureen in Fresno. Maureen, you're on Quality of Life.
Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. I lived in Ventura, California for 40 years. I only moved to the Valley 7 years ago. But day after day, time after time, I drove down Harbor Boulevard to see an electrical plant sitting on the beach. I see oil wells drilling out in the water. Why, if we can pipe gas from Alaska and so on and so forth, can we not use the power that God gave us in the waves of the ocean to generate power and electricity? We have electrical power lines all over the mountains and everywhere. Also, we have thermal energy in the northern states. Have we ever tapped into thermal energy? It's just something that has always been heavy on my mind, and I wonder why they have never been explored.
Well, thank you very much for that call, Maureen, today. Is that part of your plan in having this clean energy park, not so much in specifically just geothermal, but in diversifying and having those multiple areas of energy generation?
Nothing would make me happier than to see the state pursue more geothermal, because that is a base load energy. Some people don't know that. But all the experimentation that the state's done with that hasn't worked out well. The wave has action has proved to be experimental at best. That hasn't worked out well. But I want to say one thing about the one caller when he mentioned the battery. Everybody that's listening to this, probably a lot of you are in your cars right now, and you're wondering about the spent fuel and the half-life of the spent fuel. I might remind you that that battery in your car is producing lead. Lead is a known mutant and a known poison. And what is the half-life of lead? There isn't one. It's a stable element. So with every endeavor, you have to examine it real closely. So, I'm not a big fan of a battery action if those batteries produce lead, because there's no way to get rid of lead.
We have time for one more caller. Let's go now to Tehachapi and Eugene. You're on Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio with John Hudson.
I think we pretty much covered the environmental process, but one of the things that I wanted to ask was initially we started off by saying that Fresno and the Central Valley are the Appalachia of the West. So my question is, what type of jobs will this generate? Because most of the time when a project like this is proposed and then established, it winds up being that you bring over engineers and designers from France, or out-of-state people and welders and construction crews, and Bechtel comes in, and they build this stuff. And the people that are supposed to be getting the jobs that are local and that are on welfare still wind up sitting on welfare.
Thank you very much for that call, Eugene. John, in terms of job creation, what does this mean?
Building a 1,600-megawatt plant means 5,000 construction workers for 5 years. Dr. Scott England at Fresno State said if we create 40,000 jobs that pay $30,000 a year, we put $85 million in the economy. I am investigating and will hope to announce before the summer's over with some type of a community service agreement that all contractors must sign when they begin working on our energy park. That means a certain percentage – it's not a local hire agreement, but it does mean that a certain percentage of those workers coming from certain zip codes in the valley must be taking into apprenticeship programs for electricians, plumbers, welders, all of those things, so that they will have the job skills when this project is complete to further compete. Also, Craig School of Business at Fresno State said in order for us to stay healthy – with our plant, that we should, and we have every intention to, create a nuclear engineering wing at Fresno State to provide those jobs for local folks.
Well, John, this is certainly a very interesting and controversial topic, one that I'm sure we'll revisit again in the future. We had a great deal of response today, and we can continue the conversation. You can continue the conversation. Send us an email at talk@kvpr.org. John Hudson, the president and CEO of the Fresno Nuclear Energy Group, LLC, joins us today. John, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Joe. And if you have any more questions with those emails, you have my email address. Forward it to me, and I will do my best to answer every one of them.
We will do that. This is Valley Public Radio. Michael Hansen, coming up next.
Support for Quality of Life comes from Chevron and Avicennia Wellness Center, online at avecinia.com.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of today's edition of Quality of Life. When you hear the phone numbers, please don't call. You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. My name is Joe Moore. Joining us now in our studio, we have the superintendent of the Fresno Unified School District, Michael Hansen. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, Joe.
A few weeks ago, we started a discussion about Fresno Unified. Guest Mark Arax was on our program, and in addition to a number of other topics, Fresno Unified came up. He had some serious allegations about the district, and we wanted to give you an opportunity to respond and get equal time on these issues. Before we get into some of those things, the district has been in the news lately with the ongoing efforts to solve the state's budget crisis. And right now, one of the things that's on your desk is trying to determine how Fresno Unified moves forward in these uncertain times. $71 million budget gap you're facing?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Uncertain and ugly is the best way to put it. I was just on the phone this morning with Sacramento, and it seems that there's a plan underway that might actually have some legs, where they may be talking about trying to extend taxes into September and then have a vote. That would be equally problematic to us as we are now, because it doesn't guarantee any revenue, and we would still be in the exact same spot that we are now. So I'm not sure that our Sacramento folks are really understanding what it means to not have this budget solved in a timely manner. Our Board of Education by law has to have a balanced budget done by June. And everything else is a game, I think, in Sacramento. And so we've already done about $88 million in revenue cuts. Our board has authorized another $33.8 million on March 9th. But we still – that only takes us about halfway to what we have left. We still have probably another $38 to $39 million that we don't have answers for right now.
What does that do to morale in the district, your teachers, your fellow administrators, parents, everyone?
I think it's not just employees, frankly. I think it affects kids. I think it affects communities. I think it affects our entire state. You know, I recently was not able to be here last week. I was on our spring break. Our family was in Boston for a spring break vacation, and it was remarkable, even in airports and in other states. Other states don't feel the same way that we do. We have been feeling this pressure with this structural gap in the budget for darn near a decade. I mean, this is our third governor with this kind of budget problem. So I'm a fan now of just saying, do what you have to do to fix it so that we can plan appropriately and move forward. But I think everybody's got to be very, very well aware that the decisions we make now will impact the quality of life in California for decades and decades to come. So if they're not going to be willing to invest in public education, we're going to feel it for quite some time.
Again, you're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. You can call us with your questions. Michael Hansen, superintendent of Fresno Unified, is our guest. The phone number, 559-275-8989, or toll-free 800-224-8989. One of the other funding-related issues that has been in the news lately is in regards to McLean High School and the performance there. The state had been providing or there had been some special money provided to McLean High to help boost its performance in recent years, and unfortunately the benchmarks were not met and that money went away. What does that mean for McLean students, parents, and what is the plan moving forward there?
The plan is coming together now. We don't have all details yet worked out with our site staff. Nobody has lost their job as a result of layoffs at McLean High. We had enough openings with retirements, for example, in the district so that the decreased staffing that we have to account for at McLean, people will have jobs throughout our district. But what I will just say is the QEIA, the Quality Education Investment Act, was about a $3 billion lawsuit settlement between the California Teachers Association and Governor Schwarzenegger. We were funded randomly, frankly, across the state for 19 schools in Fresno Unified for poor performing schools. It comes to about $14 million a year. McLean was one of those, along with Roosevelt and Fresno as high schools. And there were a set of metrics that they needed to meet, and I've been a fan continually of accountability that says give us more accountability and give us the flexibility to go after it. And in this case, at McLean High, we met numerous targets year over year, but for English language arts on the CASE, the California High School Exit Exam, for our sophomores. We didn't make adequate progress for sophomores, and we lost the funding. And that's part of the game that you get into with the accountability measures. And so I can't cry over that spilt milk. If I'm going to take the money to invest, we didn't get it done, and we're making alternative plans now. So I think Scott Lamb, our new principal, the staff has rallied. I think we'll be fine. We just had a board report that was quite extensive about all three of our Cuyah High Schools at our last board meeting that was quite encouraging. And save this one hiccup with money attached to it at McLean, I think all things are pointing in the right direction at those three high schools.
One of the issues that's been in the news, not just in Fresno Unified, but throughout the state and nation, but also locally, is the issue of discipline in the schools, safety in the schools, students who may be disruptive. And one of the concerns brought up on our program a few weeks ago was the issue of suspensions and a drop in suspensions during your tenure. There's also some discussion that is not entirely a local issue and that there's been changes in Sacramento. How do you respond to that concern about the drop in suspensions? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing or is it accurate?
Well, I would also say that we also just had a two-hour board workshop last week on student discipline in Fresno Unified. And so I'll go over a few things that I think are important to note. First, I think there was an allegation made that there was a quota put out by me as superintendent in my first year, which is totally and completely false and I think made up for whatever reason. So the reality is when I did get here, what I found to be true was that a person being suspended, you can be suspended but have committed multiple infractions of the California Ed Code. So what was happening was we were counting Ed Code infractions as suspensions. And so let me give you an example. A student could get in a fight and then be defiant to a teacher as part of being in that fight. Both of those Ed Code infractions would be listed on the suspension form, but it counts as one suspension for 5 days. That was actually going down as two suspensions. All we did was clean up the record keeping. You saw a drop. That's what occurred, but people didn't take the time to do the investigation that was necessary to figure that one out. So that's the first part. But I will say that school safety is top priority for our board, for me, for our principals, our teachers, and our community. So one of the earliest commissions that we put together, Superintendent's Commission on School Safety, took place, and folks like Jim Aldridge chaired it. Jerry Dyer and folks from Linda Penner, folks throughout the community were on it, and they took a hard look at our school campuses across the district and came up with a report that was published to our board. And then we went through and went about solving the issues as best we could. So they made recommendations that have resulted in us implementing a comprehensive school safety plan and standardized emergency management system across the district, security cameras across the district, maps, ID badges for students, changes in our signage across the campus. And then more recently, we have gone more aggressively into training for staff, something called a Safe and Civil Schools program that we have run all of our schools through in four different cohorts over the last 3 years. This is the first year now that everybody has been through it. And we've added Capturing Kids' Hearts, and now we're starting a bullying prevention program as well. So I think we've been pretty comprehensive. But we've always got things to improve upon. I'm the most critical, I think, of anybody in the city about what's going on in our schools. But it's a concern, and we keep working on it, but our staff is diligent each and every day to make sure that our kids are safe and that our community is well taken care of.
You've been on the job for a number of years now and had an opportunity to learn about this community and learn about the problems that a district such as Fresno Unified faces. One of the claims that Mr. Arax made on our program a few weeks ago was that Fresno Unified is, quote, the most broken district in the state. On our program, on our air that day, I countered that claim, saying that many would say that the district was broken far before you took this position. The district was on the verge of state takeover. What are the most dramatic changes you've seen in your tenure here since, what was it, 2006?
I landed here early May. May 1st, I think, was my first day, May 1st of 2005. So as deputy superintendent for a couple of months, and I started as superintendent July 1 of 05. So I think that claim was probably very appropriate May 1st of 2005. But I think since then, the statement is just simply groundless. In fact, we have posted 5 years of academic gains. We have an additional 7,000 students right now who are proficient or advanced in mathematics that weren't before. We've reduced our dropout rate. We've increased the graduation rate, and those are two very different calculations. We've increased student access to the highest level and most rigorous courses like advanced placement sponsored by the College Board. We've increased the number of students completing their A to G course requirement, which is that set, that course requirement set that allows a kid to qualify to go to the California State University system or the University of California. We have some of the most stable finances for any big district or any district, I would say, in the state of California now. We have technology systems that were deemed the worst in the state that are now regularly we have people visiting. Even actually the people who deemed us the worst in the state in 06 were actually just back last week, the Fiscal Crisis Management Assistance Team, to come and see all of the great work that we've been doing under the leadership of Kurt Madden. So I could go on and on to just talk about a range of things that have gone on across the district. And I say this all the time. I am incredibly proud of all the work that's gone on behalf of our staff and for kids in Fresno Unified, but I'm equally disgusted with how much work we still have to do. It's a long, long way to go. It's a very competitive world out there, and we are still operating from a deficit.
In addition to criticism of the district and the various issues involved in running a large urban school district, there's also been criticism of you personally, and specifically in the Fresno Bee and on our air, of your driving record in regards to some speeding tickets and also driving with an expired license. Do you feel these are legitimate areas of concern, and have they become a distraction in any way for you?
Are they legitimate? They're legitimate for someone because they're spending their time trying to make news with them.
Are they legitimate in terms of your role as superintendent? Are they material to your job?
No, they're not. But and as I've said before publicly a couple of times, I take responsibility for letting my license expire. My fault, should have taken care of it, and I didn't. And so that's my issue. I did find out that our new licenses look fabulous, right? My little donor
Michael
cart
has it here in our studio.
Exactly, my little donor sticker now is digitized and it doesn't slip off my license. In case anybody listening wants to know, I'm an organ donor. I think it's a distraction for some folks. It's certainly not for me. I get up every day trying to improve Fresno Unified to become the best district we possibly can become. As for the personal stuff has come the moment you take the job. I mean, anybody who doesn't agree with decisions that you make or recommendations that you're putting forward, you put yourself in that situation. It's unfortunate, but sometimes that's the way things go. It's unfortunate. I would just like to keep people focused on kids' education and making sure that we're producing the best possible environment for kids to learn in as possible.
You're listening to Quality of Life on Valley Public Radio. Fresno Unified Superintendent Michael Hansen is our guest. Unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Michael, thank you for joining us today, and we appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
This is Quality of Life. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production manager Don Weaver, I'm Joe Moore. You can email us with your questions or comments about the program, talk@kvpr.org. This is Valley Public Radio, KVPR Fresno, KPRX, Bakersfield.
Support for Quality of Life comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.